Next up, we have General Electric. Presenting for the company will be the CFO, Keith Sharon. He's got about 10 or 15 slides or so. I also want to make sure everyone knows with us today is Trevor Schoenberg, who runs the investor relations operation for GE, and then we'll do some Q&A. Keith?
Jerry, thank you. Good morning, everybody. I'd like to just make a few comments about where we are in the company and then open it up for question and answer. A few messages about GE and the renewal that we've been going through. Number one, the main benefit we got out of going through the financial crisis and the economic disruption that we've had for the last 18 months is that we've had a real focus on renewing the portfolio. Today, we have redefined what's important to us in financial services. We're going to be smaller. We're going to be more focused. I'll show you the pieces that we're concentrating on. On the industrial side, we made a clear call on capital allocation with the JV with Comcast that we're going to allocate capital out of media and back into infrastructure. I think when you look at that combination as we go through the transformation, that's a terrific, strong portfolio, great competitive positions, and we feel great about the growth opportunities in infrastructure. The way we're going to grow infrastructure is the way we've done it in the past. Focus on technology. We're really increasing everything around organic growth, and I'll show you the numbers on how much we're putting into new product introductions. We're driving global growth, and the vast majority of the growth over the next 10 years is clearly going to come from emerging markets. We've got a huge presence there, and we're going to continue to build out our presence. With that installed base of equipment that we win, we're really focused on delivering terrific services value for our customers, and I'll show you how important that is to the portfolio. Third point, financial services losses are not going to continue forever at these levels. We're going to have a snapback in earnings as losses roll over. You've seen a lot of discussion about where are we in the credit cycle and where are non-earnings and delinquencies and what does it mean for the future. Clearly, losses are going to peak for us sometime in 2010. In some parts of the portfolio, they may have already peaked. As we go forward, we're not going to have those loss levels, which without even any new strategies in GE Capital, you're going to get a real earnings snapback just from not booking $11 billion, $12 billion of losses and impairments on an annual basis. Finally, as we've gone through this crisis, we've made some really tough actions around cash and capital allocation. We're going to have substantial cash available for capital allocation that we're going to put to work to grow shareholder value in the future, and I'll show you how we feel about that as well. In terms of the portfolio pre-crisis, GE Financial Services became too large a part of the company. You see that in Jeff's letter to the shareowners. Over 50% of earnings were coming out of financial services. That's not the ideal mix for us. Out of the renewal, we're going to be able to, as we go forward, have earnings from GE Capital be somewhat in the 30%-40% range, we think, on a sustainable basis. We took a tremendous number of actions in 2009 to make the company safe and secure. We had to do it. GE Capital remained profitable. We shrunk GE Capital at a time when we had to. We did over $50 billion of ending net investment where our collections exceeded our originations, and we're going to continue to do that as we go forward, as you know. We pre-funded 2010's debt plan, and this year we've already done $7 billion of the $25 billion that we expect to do as we pre-fund 2011, so that continues. In 2009, we had a good performance in our industrial businesses. We outperformed our industrial peers. We've got good margin levels. If you look at the services business, which is so important to us, even in the recession, we grew our operating profit in 2009 in that services business by about 7%. We've changed our financial flexibility game completely here when you look at the outlook. We ended the year with $9 billion of cash at the industrial parent. We got over $60 billion of cash in GE Capital, so we've changed how we manage ourselves from a liquidity perspective. When we close the Comcast deal, sometime we expect to happen sometime this year, our expectation is we'll have somewhere around $25 billion of cash at the parent by the end of 2010, and we're going to be able to use that and redeploy that back into growth in an investor-friendly way. We exceeded the high end of our cash flow targets for 2009, so I think the teams did a very good job. We've got an operating council that meets every month to focus on delivering our net income and cash and reducing our working capital intensity and sharing best practices, and we delivered $16.5 billion of cash last year. We continue to invest for the future. Even in a very tough economic environment and recession last year, we grew our internally funded, company-funded R&D by 7%, and I'll show you how we're doing that in 2010. We did over $3 billion of restructuring to right-size the company. Infrastructure is a fantastic combination of businesses. We've got $90 billion of revenue. This excludes the media revenue $15 billion of operating profit, good operating margins over 16%. You know, we're going to continue to invest in R&D. Every one of our business leaders is challenged to make sure that we are doing everything we need to do from an organic growth perspective around new product investments. And, you know, we're about to go into our strategic sessions, our growth playbook, and all the CEOs are coming back to us making sure that we're funding the technology we need to fund to improve our competitive advantage. We're well positioned in the growth markets. I'll show you how big we are outside the U.S. and how we continue to grow there and what we're doing to localize and become more of a partner with our customers in those regions. Our services business is fantastic. It's probably the most important part of the portfolio for investors, over $35 billion of revenue with high margins and a sustainable profit stream. And then when you look at where we're going to grow, we like the portfolio we have today. We like the industrial businesses. We're not really looking at new white space. We like the businesses we're in, and we think we can do organic growth and inorganic growth in the adjacencies that we've already started to invest in, so we're not looking for new businesses. And our capability and margins and working capital continue to be very strong for the team. You know, technology, this is the GE-funded R&D on the left side. We've taken it from $3.3 billion to $3.8 billion is the estimate for 2010. We've also increased our plant and equipment spending, investing in product capability basically around the world for growth. Over 35,000 technologists in the company. This is a huge priority for us to make sure we get this right. We've got four global R&D centers. And all the teams are looking at the core part of their business and what do we need to do to continue to provide more products at more price points, whether it's you know, the new wind turbines at 2.5 megawatts that are rolling out this year in the U.S. They've already been out in Europe. The next generation of the F technologies, there's a big NPI program, over $150 million focused on that. In new launches with new products in our existing space, the B-Scan, the portable ultrasound, is a great product for global growth, value MRI coming out of China. And then finally, you know, there's a big opportunity for us to be more of a systems provider. We're a great product company. We are great at selling product, and we've got to become better at solutions. And if you look at things like the smart grid, we're really expanding our services focus around providing solutions to utilities as opposed to just smart meters and other types of products that we typically sell today. So I think there's a lot of work going on around that, and there's a lot of investment in technology around solutions thinking. You know, global growth is so important to us. We went from industrial revenue, again, excluding media, of $56 billion in 2003 to almost $90 billion last year. And you can see the growth in the global regions, China and India and Southeast Asia is the green part of the bar, the pie, and the resource-rich world, people with commodities, Canada, Australia, Brazil, Middle East and Africa, Eastern Europe. So where we see minerals and oil and gas, you can see it's gone from 24% of the company's revenue to 34% over a reasonably short time frame. And the way we're doing that is we are really going to be more local. We have increased the number of service shops, and we'll continue to do that over the next couple of years. You know, basically, these countries need more capability. They're looking for the ability to provide their own servicing. They're looking for the ability to generate their own technology capability. And we've got to be more local to be able to win these transactions. We're going to do more local design and manufacture. We're going to do more on research centers. We're working on selecting the final site in Brazil. We're growing our research center in Abu Dhabi. And then we're aligning our leadership team. SEB is Senior Executive Band. You know, it's the top leadership in the company. We've increased it from 60. We'll have over 100 of our Senior Executive Band outside the U.S. in the developing regions by 2012. So we are one of the largest emerging market companies in terms of revenue and capability. And as I said, services is so important to us, $35 billion of revenue, about $10 billion of operating profit last year. It grew even in the recession. We continue to grow our install base. Even in 2009, the number of new engines that we delivered into the fleet exceeded the number of engines that were retired or parked, and we grew our install base. You know, 40-plus percent of our engines haven't even come in for the first shop visit yet. We've got a great long-term service agreement business, $129 billion backlog of these long-term agreements where we lock in the material parts stream with our customers. And as I said, we continue to invest in additional solutions capability here. And a lot of the NPI, the new product introduction money I showed previously, is going into services. You know, if you switch to financial services, we've made some dramatic changes here. We've had to, and I think we're better off for it. We've on the strategy side, we've shrunk the ending net investment. That's going to continue to shrink. We did over $50 billion last year. We got about $25 to $30 billion a year through 2013. plan. Our reserves have increased. Our margins are getting better. I'll show you that. And the team did a great job of taking out costs. Where are we going to be in financial services going forward? It's in the middle of this chart. We're going to still be in real estate. We have a tremendous origination capability, a great team, and it'll be some part of the portfolio as we go forward. Consumers, 15 to 20% at good returns. That's principally the retail sales finance business, which is heavily advantaged by the distribution partnerships we have with all the retailers in the U.S. primarily. And then we have the private label credit card business, which is the dynamics have changed dramatically. You know, when we had to renew the two retailers that renewed in 2009, no one else came to the party to bid, and the returns are far better than they were before, and the agreements with customers have good risk sharing. Mid-market lending and leasing is going to be the core of GE Capital. That's our bread and butter. That's where we have the originators out dealing with mid-market customers who need capital. They need lease equity and loan value. 40 to 50% of the book will be that globally. And then connected to GE is so important to us. We've got domain knowledge in the energy space. We've got domain knowledge in aviation and GECAS and domain knowledge in healthcare. And those are the things that we're going to concentrate on at pretty good returns. If you look going forward at GE Capital, at some point this loss cycle rolls over. We're seeing some positive signs in delinquency or non-earnings. You've seen some of that in the fourth quarter. We've got to string together a number of quarters to really have a sustainable trend here. But you know it's not going to last forever. And we're booking $12 billion of losses and impairments. A normal year without any change in reserves because you're over-provisioned at some point in time would be $4 billion, say. So there's a significant amount of earnings that are going to come just from not continuing to have to book these losses at these levels. And it's going to happen over the next couple of years. The left side of this page is on volume. We did shrink the book last year. The teams did a good job of prioritizing where we put capital to work, and collections exceed originations by over $50 billion. And where we did put capital to work, the returns are very good. You know, the financial crisis had a lot of competitive impacts, and one of them was a lot of the competitors that we used to go head-to-head with are no longer participating in the marketplace. So I think there's a lot of advantage space here for the capital team. And one of the best signs about that are the commercial margins and the consumer margins have turned. The volume that we put on the books in 2009 was at higher margins than the volume that rolled off in 2009. And we've been waiting for when it's the whole portfolio turn, and it turns in 2010. And you can see on the right side that our portfolio margins will go positive in 2010 for the first time in several years. And it's a huge positive for the team as we go forward. In terms of capital allocation, I mentioned we're going to have $25 billion after the close of the Comcast JV by the end of the year. And we expect to continue to have positive free cash flow in 11 and 12, so there'll be even more capital. You know, the only call we have on ourselves is under the income maintenance agreement between GE and GE Capital. Basically, we've said that we think we'll have to put in somewhere around $2 billion into GE Capital in early 2011. They have to earn over 10% of their interest costs in a pre-tax basis, and right now we think somewhere less than $2 billion, around $2 billion for that agreement. We're going to keep the company safe and secure. We're going to run the company with more cash. You know, we've taken our commercial paper down below $50 billion. We've got a pool of cash in GE Capital that exceeds that. We've got our bank lines that exceed that, so you're more than two times covered. We're going to continue to run the company on a conservative basis from a liquidity perspective, but this capital at the parent, we'll keep some amount for safe and secure at the parent. But we're going to reinvest this money. We plan to resume growing the dividend again in 2011 at the GE parent level. There's a potential for the retirement of the preferred stock. I think that's a very attractive instrument for us to retire. That's callable in the third quarter of 2011. We have certainly opportunities on the buyback and opportunities for accretive M&A. And we formed a capital allocation team in the company. Basically, it's myself and some other parts of the finance team. We've got some business leaders on it. And we're looking at all the practices that we've done over the past 10 years. What are the things that work? What are the things we can do better? What do external companies, other companies do around capital allocation? We've used some outside third parties to help us around capital allocation. And basically, we'll be covering more about how we think about that when we get to the EPG meeting early in the spring here. So what do you have to believe about GE as an investor? You know, we've said 2010 is going to be about flat. I think we're not giving guidance, as everyone knows, but if you look at the first quarter, the estimates out there for consensus are down year over year in the first quarter. We got tough quarter in terms of comparisons with things that happened in GE Capital that were one-timers on tax or gain in Penske last year. And those things don't repeat this year. We have the Olympics this year, which is a loss, as everyone knows. So the first quarter, I read someone's note, I think it might have been Terry's, that said it was uninspiring. So if the first quarter's down, but the whole year's flat, the rest of the year improves. And I think that's something that we're really looking forward to, is a better outlook as we go forward. You know, the GE Capital losses are going to rebound here. There's no question about it, and that we'll benefit from that in the next 2 years dramatically, I think, by the time you get into 2012. We continue to benefit from this services business, which has got a tremendous sustainable set of cash flows. Our equipment backlog is pretty strong. We came into the recession with a pretty strong equipment backlog. The teams have done a good job of maintaining the margin of the backlog. We've got a positive value gap. In other words, the price and the output of our equipment is better than last year by several hundred million dollars in 2010. And we're getting deflation. And so our deflation is several hundred million dollars in 2010 positive as well. And that's good for continuing our margins. And then finally, with the capital that we have from the cash flow we generate plus from the NBC transaction, we're going to have a lot of cash optionality that's going to allow us to invest for the future. So, you know, we feel really good about the outlook. It's the best outlook I've seen for the company in many years. And we've got to continue to execute with intensity, and the team's committed to do that. But we like the portfolio. We've had to make some dramatic changes in it, and we like the outlook that we have. So with that, Terry, I'd love to open it up for some questions.
We'll let you get comfortable. All right. Here.
Big old chairs they have for us up here.
Thanks.
Thanks for the presentation. And I guess I wanted to just start with kind of what's new since the January call. And you know, you made a couple of comments maybe to key off there. The first one is it seemed to me that the commitment to the dividend in 2011 is a little bit more specificity around that comment. Maybe it's just my perception, but maybe you can touch on that first.
Sure, I think things are becoming clearer, obviously, in the world. I think we've got better visibility around financial services. We have very good visibility around our cash flow, and I think if you think about 2011 for us, we believe we're going to have earnings growth. We haven't provided guidance, but we do believe we'll have earnings growth. We feel like ending the year with $25 billion of cash after we close the NBC deal gives us some real financial flexibility. And we'd like to grow the GE dividend in 2011. We're not putting a number on it, but we do expect to grow the dividend in 2011. I'd say we're not counting on a dividend out of GE Capital for 2011 as part of that assumption. So this is just based on what we know today without any additional capital expectations out of GE Capital for 2011. We do believe we'll be growing the GE dividend.
That is helpful. And then I guess in terms of the better visibility, I think one of the areas that we still get pushback from investors on in that context is really the regulatory landscape. And you know, we've obviously got some news out this week, and maybe you can try to interpret the tea leaves here as they stack up for us as it relates to GE Capital.
Sure. There's been an awful lot of work done around regulatory changes, and certainly we'll be affected by that. I think if you go back to June of last year with the initial white paper that proposed a separation of GE Capital and a number of restrictions around our financial services business, I think the world has gotten dramatically better. You know, today, if you look, we're going to wait and see what happens with the proposal by Senator Dodd, but we're fully prepared for additional financial regulatory reform. I think it's clear that we will be grandfathered. We will not be required to separate GE Capital. We're confident that we'll be able to continue to maintain the ownership of the banks that we have in Utah, which fund both some commercial and consumer activity. We are not really that affected by the consumer legislation. Whatever happens in terms of restrictions on credit cards or things like that, we've already put in place in our private label credit card business, but that is something that whatever happens there would be something that we'd be prepared to deal with. From a regulatory perspective, we expect to have we're prepared for a change in regulator today. We are regulated. The Office of Thrift Supervision is our regulator on a global consolidated basis. We are regulated by the New York State Bank. We're regulated overseas by the FSA in the UK and the FSA in Japan. But we're prepared for the Fed to be our regulator if that's what comes out of this. I think, you know, our view is the higher the quality of the regulator, the better off we'll be having that the proper oversight, and we're prepared for that. So I think, you know, we're interested to see what the details are that get finally agreed to here. I think financial regulatory reform would be important to get it through and to get it concluded. I think it's good for the markets to have that uncertainty removed. And I think there are some things that everybody learned in the financial crisis that ought to be addressed. And I think a substantial amount of that does get addressed in what's being proposed between the House and the Senate. So, you know, I think it'd be good to get financial regulatory reform completed, and we're fully prepared for it.
It sounds like net-net, no great new surprises out of the way you read it today. And I guess the other question is there anything from the standpoint of businesses you're in today that you would have to move out on an accelerated basis in that context you can discern at this point?
We're not anticipating that. I think there are things that we already have concluded we're not going to continue to invest in, like real estate equity. So if that's a hot spot, that's already something that's in basically maintenance mode. You know, we're going to continue to invest enough to make the properties as valuable as we can, but we're not going to continue to grow that business. That will shrink over time. But I don't anticipate there's anything that we're in that we can't be in. Again, there's a lot of details that haven't really been published yet, and we'll have to see how those come out. But I think we're very prepared for it. We've engaged a third party and done a complete review of our processes and said, okay, if the Fed is our regulator, what would we need to do and what would it look like in terms of all the different areas around capital and management and oversight. And, you know, I think we're fully prepared for it.
And I think it's sort of the general working perception of people out there that 10%, 7% tier one common ratios are kind of where things are moving. And that's why the specificity on the dividend increase in 11 was kind of interesting to me. I mean, I think on our projections, you'd kind of be at those levels or very close to it in 11. But is that a fair kind of framework that you think that people are operating with?
Well, I don't think that the specific capital requirements have been articulated that way. You know, we've tried to observe what's happened in the marketplace, what were the capital levels of people who paid back TARP money. You know, our goal is to be well capitalized in any scenario. If you look at it, as we shrink GE capital, and when we put $2 billion in for the income maintenance agreement or whatever the amount turns out to be, you know, those both increase our capital. We also, you know, got a benefit from converting some of our hybrid debt to Tier 1 securities, about 50 basis points on Tier 1. So I think, you know, the whole team is prepared to have more capital. I think that our outlook as we go forward, if you run the play from now until the end of 2010, I think we have what we believe, based on the capital standards that we know today, adequate capital and G capital. And I think if you look at the shrinkage in 2011 and 2012, that generates additional capital that, you know, whether it's needed to maintain a higher ratio or it's available for other purposes eventually, you know, we'll have to see. But, we obviously put the equity raise capital into G capital to make the ratio stronger. I think that was a good thing to do. And obviously, that's helped a lot in terms of our comparability to banks and other financial institutions.
Okay, and Keith, I think if you got past the headline of our recent report, we sort of stepped through a number of the investor concerns. And obviously,
yep.
Commercial real estate is still one of those areas that people feel like maybe there's some downside risk. Can you speak to the trends that you've seen, you know, in the market here so far this year, and how you're feeling about that particular part of the book?
Sure, I think we're in agreement that commercial real estate is the one place that we're still very concerned about in terms of the volatility in G Capital. I think we had a review last week with our board, with the audit committee, I think we're being very diligent about how we manage that book. We've got our debt maturities that happen this year, and we've got a plan about what do we collect, what do we have to renegotiate, what do we have to extend, what will we foreclose on. On the equity side, there was an estimate we had of somewhere around 13% of additional value declines in the equity book this year. You know, there have been some indicators it could be less than that. We'll have to see. It's really a property-by-property evaluation that we do on what are the cash flows, what are the lease rates, what are the, occupancy, and based on those tests, we'll have some impairments or not this year. So I think there are some signs that things are not as dire as they were, but things are still not coming out yet, I'd say, in real estate. And I think it's the one place that the team is still, it's got a, that's It's got some volatility, it's got some uncertainty, and I think that, you know, we've captured that in how we planned for 2010 for GE Capital. But there's still a lot more to learn as we go through quarter by quarter and look at the economy, look at unemployment, look at GDP growth. That's going to affect our overall view of how we what will the ultimate losses be in commercial real estate this year and next year.
That's fair. And then sort of related, but maybe we touch on the environment for asset sales. There have been some press reports, obviously, on your position in Guaranty. So maybe just asset sales broadly. But then as it relates to some of the questioning around the commercial real estate book, what the strategic thinking might be in terms of the value of trying to look at asset sales in that business on an accelerated basis, even if that would require you to incur some losses on those types of sales, particularly when we get clarity on capital levels in the context that perhaps this is a small part of the portfolio that's got a disproportionate impact on overall investor psychology.
Sure. I think, first of all, that we, you know, going through the financial crisis, we put our plans together based on things that we were in control of. So to just come out and say, okay, we're going to shrink GE Capital, the way we're going to do is we're going to sell a bunch of stuff, was completely unrealistic. There were no buyers, there were no markets, there were no capital markets for that. And our plan has been put together based on things we control, and I feel really good about that. I think in 2010, we do have some things that are on the market, like the Guaranty stake that you mentioned. I think it's very saleable. But again, if the markets open up and people do want to acquire some of those things, we'll be able to play. But our plan doesn't require it, doesn't depend on it. You know, our ability to hit the size requirements we have is mostly in our control. Again, I'm not counting on a double dip. I'm not counting on another reversion to, you know, terrible capital markets like we saw in 2008. But I think if we see the environment we have today, we're going to be able to kind of hit the numbers we have without counting on a lot of dispositions. In terms of real estate, it depends on the economics. If we had a property that we thought over time we'd lose more money by sticking to it and we had a chance to move it, we'd move it. So I think it's really about the economic decisions. I think today, you know, selling things at a liquidity discount because you don't have any demand out there and realizing losses that you don't think ultimately you will realize for shareholders, that doesn't seem to be a good trade-off for us. So it's going to be property by property. What's the ultimate exposure and loss? And that can happen on the debt side, too. I mean, in some places we may say we'll throw the keys in.
And I think you did say in your remarks that, you know, the most recent data suggests on the consumer side, things continue to trend okay there.
I agree. I you know, we'll show you when we do the first quarter earnings what are the delinquencies and what are our charge-offs and things like that. But there's been no real change in the trend lines that we had in the fourth quarter, I'd say.
Okay. Let's take some time on the industrial side because I think, you know, there are some interesting things starting to turn there a little bit. We've had some commentary from some other companies presenting here on the commercial aerospace aftermarket. I think your healthcare business is one that's been on its back for quite some time.
Sure.
And an upside surprise in 4Q. I think we're still trying to figure out whether that's a data point or a trend, but maybe you could touch on those two potential needle movers on the upside for you.
Well, I'd say healthcare first. You know, the team has been through a lot. We've had a very challenging market, whether it's the uncertainty associated with the legislation or it's the reimbursement scheme that you know, providers are going to be under, or our product investments. You know, we've had to work through all those. I think the team has done a really good job around investing in products. I think they've got more competitive products at more price points. I think they're benefiting from some of that. I think providers, what we're seeing is need to ultimately have the equipment and the technology to deliver healthcare solutions for their customers. And they've kind of got a framework of, if the legislation passes, what will be the reimbursement scheme that they're operating under, and if it doesn't pass, what will be the reimbursement scheme. And I think that a lot of people have moved past the uncertainty and lockup and freeze period to, okay, I need to run my business, and we're benefiting from that. We had double-digit equipment orders in the fourth quarter. I think we'll have a double-digit equipment orders in the first quarter. The team has done a pretty good job and continues to benefit from some of their investments. So I think the healthcare outlook is better. Again, I'd like to string together a number of quarters to say you've got a more sustainable trend here, but right now we feel good about the performance, and the team feels pretty good about how they're operating, I know, in the first quarter. On aerospace, I saw a lot of positives. Again, we were dealing with such negatives in terms of revenue passenger miles and freight traffic a year ago that the comparisons, I think, are easier. But there are some better signs. I guess Airbus is going to increase its production of the A320. I think things like that don't have a big change in our outlook. You know, if you look at the dynamics of equipment margin versus services margin there, I mean, it's good that they're increasing. It's a good, healthy sign for the industry, but that won't really change our outlook that dramatically because, you know, a few more engines a month. It's good, it's helpful, it's positive, but, you know, it's really around the overall business outlook, including services. And so far, that's been pretty good. I think the service spares orders have continued to be reasonably strong globally. And, again, as you see revenue passenger miles up, business travel as a percent of the revenue up, freight up, those are all good things for the business as it will help improve the service business over time. So I think that's probably a bigger driver for us is what happens with revenue passenger miles, freight passenger miles, and premium traffic for the air carriers.
Helpful. I want to make sure we get some questions from the audience here. So do we have a question or two for Keith?
Hi, Jack.
Talk a couple things. One is the deposit price in natural gas being taken by your utility customers on power gen? And then also, can you talk about, you know, you probably own whatever 800 narrow body aircraft, what you think about a new narrow body aircraft and where, how close we are to there?
What was the first one? I'm sorry.
What natural gas, your customers for turbines are saying about the low natural gas prices, and does this create any more demand than?
Well, it, I think what will create more demand is more GDP growth. I think that'll be the bigger driver for us. I think if you look competitively, we feel great about our portfolio and what's going to provide the power generation capability, especially in this country, when you do have a pickup in demand. But, you know, electricity demand was down about 1% last year in this country, and we need more economic activity to be the biggest driver of demand. But if you look going forward, you know, what's going to provide the capacity here? It's going to be years and years and years before you'll get a nuclear plant commissioned in this country again, even if everything goes right, including the rate discussions and the financial discussions. So I think that is a challenging area for the next several years. I think coal and the issues around the environmental impact of coal are also challenging. So if you get the demand pickup here in this country, I think we feel great about the portfolio positioning with wind and gas being some of the two most advantaged technologies that will be providing that demand, supplying that demand as we go forward here. So I think the low natural gas prices have helped all the utilities running gas, and it's helped our service business, but I don't think it's really driven demand necessarily as much as what we need is global GDP. You know, in terms of a narrow body, a new narrow body, you know, there's an article in the paper today about the Boeing and Airbus and the decision they have to face and some of the competition they face. You know, if the next new narrow body is really a re-engineering of the existing narrow bodies, you know, we would definitely be in a position to participate. We're investing a lot in the technology around the CFMI product family with the C919 in China. We've got a real project with real new technology that improves fuel efficiency over the existing models. And I think we'd be well positioned to participate if a re-engineering is a solution. If it's a whole new plane, I think it's going to take a little longer. I think you'll get more technology in the engine and maybe a little later, but we'd also obviously, it's such an important part of our business, we want to participate and we think we're well positioned given the technology advantage we have today.
Other questions from the audience? You know, Keith, maybe just come back to your comments on growth sort of in the long term and all the investments you're going to make. One of the other questions I get a fair bit is when we do get that snap back in the OE side of the business, how can we be confident that that growth will be with profit growing faster than revenues, which was a little bit of a struggle. It does bring to mind some of the pieces here in terms of the unusual circumstances healthcare was in, but maybe you can just address that longer term concern as well in terms of getting back into that part of the cycle and maybe managing the balance a bit better.
Well, I hope that we do see that type of demand pick up in the next couple of years for the long cycle equipment in the company. You know, there's a discussion today, are the supply chains prepared? Is there inflation coming? What will happen to the value gap? You know, the pricing that we've seen to date on our industrial portfolio has been very close to, you know, plus or minus 1%. It's not dramatically up or down. And I think that, you know, if you look at the supply-demand characteristics today across the portfolio, I mean, if you look at aircraft engine, they're locked in. Those, you know, the next 24 months of aircraft engines have already been contracted and sold, and they're in the backlog. So, you know, pricing can have an impact, but I don't think it's going to dramatically impact us on engine deliveries over the next year. If you look at the energy business, I think that's a place you got to think about a little more. I think today the wind demand is soft, and there's excess supply, and so you're constantly looking at what are the margins there. So far, the pricing's been pretty good, and we're going to get more deflation. And our view is that the value gap, the difference between the price and the deflation or inflation, will continue to be positive for our industrial business as we go into 2011. If you look at the locomotive business, you know there's just not a lot of demand. I think that you're probably going to face more price pressure there, but you're also going to get more deflation. And our teams basically feel like they're capable of dealing with any type of demand pickup through the supply chain without having massive disruptions. You know, we don't have today what I would call a tight supply chain. We've seen some tightness in electronics and healthcare, but you know, while lead times have expanded a little bit, we're able to get the product out that we need, and the teams manage through that. But on the other long cycle businesses, we don't really see anything that's going to be disruptive, but we'll have to see how the demand comes out in the next couple of years.
Okay, appreciate it. Bumping up against time constraints here. Keith, thanks very much.
All right, Terry, thanks a lot. Really appreciate it.